This is an ABC podcast.
My guest today is Frauke Bolton-Bosshammer. A while ago, Frauke gave a speech to a room full of Perth business people. She was nervous, and being nervous, got worried that if she spoke too fast, the audience would find her accent difficult to follow. So Frauke carried on stage with her a German Stehoff doll. That's a roly-poly toy that you can't knock down. Whichever way you hit it, it always rights itself back up. Frauke explained that she was like that doll. Since migrating from Germany to Kununurra in the remote Kimberley, life has given her plenty of knocks, including the grief brought by suicide. But Frauke has found a way to raise a big, loving family and pioneer an international diamond empire along the way. Her memoir is called A Diamond in the Dust. Hi, Frauke.
Hello.
You were born and raised in Germany. What does the part of Germany that you come from look like?
It is green. It is fairly flat. I come from the very north, nearly Denmark. The Baltic Sea is very close, so I still love the water. When I'm in Perth, I always walk at the beach.
And is it a farming? Is it a farming area?
Yes, it is a farming area, and my father was a farmer, and my first husband too. Yeah.
What happened in your family, Frauke, when you were just a toddler?
Oh, yeah, it was very sad. My mother died of cancer when I was two. She was only 34. Had, of course, my father was in the war, so it wasn't an easy time.
Do you remember your mum
no,
at all?
No, unfortunately not, and that's a big grief I still have today. I don't know her voice. I know so little.
Yeah. How was she remembered in your family when you were growing up?
Oh, everybody who talked about it talked about her very, very nice, for sure. But we couldn't talk much about it because they started crying, and so we didn't want to talk too much about it.
What about with your father? Would he talk to you about her?
No. He didn't like to talk about it at all. At all. Maybe he was too sad himself. And I have seen him crying, but he didn't like that. No.
What was dinner time like?
He was very strict to us, so we had to stand before he came.
You had to stand behind your seat?
Chair till he was there. And we could sit. We couldn't start eating before he came. And he let us wait sometimes.
One time you and your siblings were a bit fussy about the food that was being offered. What did your dad do?
Oh, he was cross with us that we had complained about some food, and then he said you should know what we had to eat in the wartime. So he brought a sparrow, and it was cooked, and we had to eat a sparrow.
A sparrow that he had gone and killed?
Yeah.
Did he talk to you about what it had been like for him during the war?
Not a lot at all, no. But a lot of people his generation didn't. They just did not want to bring it back. It was too horrible.
How did you meet Friedrich, the young man that you'd married?
Yeah, Friedrich, I met him. I did an apprenticeship in a household, like a lot of people, and my mother did that before too, and met my father there. So that's how I met him. You live with this family, and you work from morning till evening and stay in the house and maybe have every second Saturday off. And go home by bus to your parents, yeah.
What sort of family did he come from? What was his family home like?
Very nice family. I felt straight away very, very nice, very sophisticated.
And how did Friedrich announce the birth of your first child?
Oh, he was over the moon. He wanted a son, and it was a son. Can you believe it? And oh, he was so happy. He ran outside and shouted loud, "Ah, we have a son! We have a son!" He was so excited and went to, because it was harvest time. Fritz was born the 2nd of August, and it was harvest time. And he went onto the silo, which is 5 meter high, and he grabbed not the right holder and fell 5 meter onto cement.
This was just after you'd given birth.
Yeah, but he survived because he had learned to fall off a horse, and so he did the right reaction. But of course, he was quite hurt, and he was pale as pale when he came because he hurt his lungs and his back.
Not long after having your son Fritz, you had a baby daughter, Margaret.
Yeah.
How did Zimbabwe come into the picture?
Yeah, look, my husband was really a pioneer, and he studied, it's called Ag Inc. In Germany, and that's 4 years of studying, and he must have got some ideas there, and he knew of one farmer in then Rhodesia, and he called him and said, can you find us a place? And he did.
What did you think about this idea to go to?
I loved it because I thought, oh, not a winter in Germany, you know, so just warm weather.
What was life like in Zimbabwe?
I didn't have enough to do because you need to employ a houseboy, even they are not a boy anymore. I'm sorry, that's a horrible name. I don't know how they call them today. I had a nanny, I had a gardener, and yeah, I did just not have enough to do, so I visited friends whenever I could. Yeah.
So after your time there working with your husband working on the farm in Zimbabwe,
yeah,
how did you feel about coming home to Germany?
Oh, that was very good because we did not have a lot of money at all. And we had more luxury, which we didn't have in Zimbabwe. But I'm not sad about it that we couldn't spend a lot of money, because as long as you know one day it will change, it's okay. And I knew this, and it just makes you stronger.
And at that time, Frauke, back in Germany with your husband and your young children, what future did you imagine for yourself?
Oh, I imagined to live forever on the family farm and be happy there and have some more kids, yeah. I always wanted a big family and just go on what my ancestors did, yeah.
Friedrich was invited to attend an agricultural tour to Australia.
Yeah.
How did he seem when you picked him up at the airport Hamburg?
Oh, he was enthusiastic. He normally talked just about investing, but this time it was different. He wanted to move there. And I did not want that.
What kind of conversations did you have about this new love he had for Australia?
I was not happy. I think because I lost my mother so early, I'm a bit like a tree who needs to be replanted, and they suffer when that happens. And I knew this, and I didn't want to go through that again. Yeah.
What was it that had grabbed him so strongly in that visit?
He liked the sun, he liked the warm weather, he liked the good soil, and Kananara has very heavy clay soil. We have very good water there, a lot of water. I was always said about 9 times more than Sydney Harbour. I don't know how they get the number, but that's what it's always said. And he just loved it.
But you weren't convinced. How did he convince you to move?
He convinced me, and he said, only for 2 years. We're there only for 2 years. We make some money, and then we're only there for 2 years.
So on that promise, you agree.
Yeah.
What were your impressions when you flew in to Kununurra for the first time?
Yeah, I thought, I didn't say it, but I thought, not an intelligent soul can live here. And I have to eat my words or whatever you can say, because I've met so many very nice, very intelligent people there. So, yeah, if people come to Kununurra and think that, no, I made the mistake myself, but please don't think that, we are not done.
Well, if you go back to the eyes of, you were what, late 20s, early 30s?
I was 33.
What did you see? What do you remember about what you
just
saw?
Just a little place with some houses and nothing around. Nothing. Yeah, I'm sure I didn't see all the water from Lake Argyle, but I just couldn't imagine that. I could not imagine this.
What did you say to Friedrich as the plane was landing?
I think I didn't say anything. I just thought, no, I'm not staying here for long.
What about the temperature when those plane doors opened?
It wasn't too bad, but it was April, but it can be. And we straight away, we got a heavy shower, so our luggage got wet. But then it was over again, like these little storms get through our town, yeah.
Well, what did you notice about the roofs, the rooftops in Kununurra when you first arrived?
No gutter, because it's too heavy. I mean, it's not true. We have some gutters, and we from my shop, I know we need to clean them always before the wet season so it doesn't rain inside and need to leaves out. But our house hasn't got gutters.
Because the rain comes so heavily?
Yeah,
the gutters
it can go so heavily, yeah.
When you moved in to your new house, what was your first duty?
Oh, it was so dirty. I opened the curtains and they were all full of spider webs. And then the geckos came out and, it was so dirty and dusty, yeah.
What was the stove like?
It smelled, you know, when milk cooks over and you don't clean it straight away, that's how it smelled. Oh, it's horrible.
So what did you do?
Oh, what can you do? Luckily, I had Steffi with me. She was my apprentice in my house from Germany, and she could come with us. And we just cleaned and cleaned and cleaned and cleaned.
And with all that German elbow grease,
yeah.
Did you manage to get rid of the red dust?
Yes, we did. But, I mean, it's quite a bit red dust there, but we did.
And when you stepped outside the door of your new house, what could you see?
Oh, look, we are direct at the Odd River. So that's what there was. Some trees, some bit of grass, but not a lot of flowering plants or so. But the river, yes.
I've never been to that part of the country.
It's about your time to come now.
What's the Odd River like? Is it move fast? Is it big?
It is quite big, but it doesn't move fast in the dry season, but it can run fast, very fast in the wet season.
And what could you buy in the shops in Kununurra in those days?
Very little, very little. That, I think, was the hardest thing for me, that I couldn't get butter or flour without weevils. Oh, bread, look, I'm German with my rye bread. Milk was, we didn't have even frozen milk. It was powdered milk. And Friedrich loved his butter. And we changed to margarine because the butter was rancid, you know.
What about your young kids, Frauke? How did they take to this new world?
Oh, they loved it because it was warm. They could run around. Fritz loved his fishing. Margit soon could get a horse. They loved it.
In your youngest son, Peter, how often was he wearing clothes?
Not very often. Not very often. We have photos of him being on the telephone. That's another story. Wearing nothing, you know. No, the telephone we had exchanged in Wyndham, you only could make phone calls. In 2 hours, you have 3 minutes to phone. And then sometimes if connection was horrible, you hardly could understand enough.
And expensive?
Yes, especially to Germany. 3 minutes, $50.
One afternoon, not long after you arrived in Kununurra, you were having a cup of tea on the back veranda and your kids were having a swim in the Ord River. What did you catch a glimpse of?
A crocodile. Yeah.
What happened?
Oh, look, I got my kids out of water very quickly. And, we knew they were there, but I hadn't seen one beforehand.
Did you see it in the water with the kids?
Yeah.
Did you let them swim in that river again?
Yes, I did, but I had next time a gun with me.
Well, how common are crocs around Kununurra?
Oh, it's getting more. We have lost at least 2 dogs. Our neighbor has lost a horse, a cow. They're getting too much. We have too many now.
when Peter was just two or so, there was a terrifying day when you thought he might have been taken. Yeah. What had happened?
Well, look, I have been in Germany, and poor Steffi, my au pair, couldn't find Peter. And just thinking about it, I feel horrible in my tummy. And this poor girl could not find Peter. And luckily, he was found 2 hours later somewhere in the bush with his little dachshund, Barbarossa, big name for a little dog. And
he just wandered off.
Yeah. And because normally he went straight to the river, I think Steffi, and poor Steffi, we were in Germany, you know. Our first trip after we arrived. And
Did she call you, or you didn't know?
No, we didn't know. I think she told us when we came back, not to frighten us.
So does that mean, you know, your kids are running around, they're swimming, fishing? Were you always on edge, scared?
No, then you can pack up your bags and go home again, I think. No, I wasn't. But with Peter, as soon as we didn't know where he was, we rushed to the river. We did.
What about snakes, Frauke? How did you feel about snakes when you arrived?
I know a lot of Germans don't like snakes and don't come maybe to Australia, which is stupid, because you need to know the nature of a snake. They can't see well, so they can feel when you walk. But they can't see well. But we had a snake, a brown snake, in our house, and our cat showed us, very pregnant, but showed us that there's something here which I don't like, the cat told us. And yeah, there was a big brown snake in the house. So Friedrich got it and chucked it out and then killed it.
Must have felt a long way from northern Germany.
Yes.
How did you prepare for your first Christmas in Australia?
Oh, we were so excited because Friedrich just finished our first crop, mung beans, and it started to look darker and darker and darker, and so we had our first rain. But it was so heavy that our living room was flooded.
Flooded?
Flooded.
From the river rising?
No, not from the river, just because we had French doors and couldn't close it good enough. Yeah, it came into the house. And so we had to clean and clean and clean, get it dry.
Did you ever turn to him and say, let's just go back home?
Yeah, I'm sure. I can't remember, but I'm sure I have said it to him, yeah.
How was the farm doing?
Not very well. It is so different, I don't know, and that's what Fritz always says these days. He came a generation too early to Kununurra, and we tried to get a person who understood the problems, but nobody wanted to come to Kununurra.
What kind of things were you up against when you were planting crops those first years?
One problem was that we had bought straight away three farms, but they were all in different directions. And so he was constantly driving.
What about pests?
Yeah, we had lots of birds. We still have lots of birds. Cockies, smaller birds, magpie geese, broggers even now. And they have big feet and they dance on your crops.
Is there anything you can do to keep them away?
Oh, we drive around and try to shoot them off, not killing them really, maybe some wounding, because that's what they don't like, but just driving around the properties. And we are not the only ones, so we have these electric that it makes a shooting noise.
So you'd be planting, and almost as soon as you're planting, birds are coming and taking?
It needs to come out. The seed has to come through, and then they might come, yeah.
How hard was your husband Friedrich working?
Very hard, from mornings to evenings.
And was he stressed, worried about the farm?
Of course he was, of course. Yeah.
You got him, Frauke, to go and see a GP to talk about that. How did that visit go?
Because we knew the doctor, and I'm not blaming him, we knew the doctor, and we had him over once or twice for dinner, and maybe we were invited to his place because we were just a small community. So when he went there, they talked about this and that, but not that much about why I sent him to a doctor, because I thought he was depressed. And he gave me through Friedrich Valium.
The doctor prescribed Valium for you?
For me.
And nothing for your husband?
No.
How was he sleeping?
Not very well. Not very well.
Christmas came around again, and you were busy preparing a big dinner for the tennis club.
Mm-hmm.
And in the middle of the night, you woke to find that he wasn't beside you again.
No, he wasn't beside me, and I was worried. I was very worried, but I had a look in Fritz's room where the guns were, and they were all three there. So I went back to bed, I think it was 2 o'clock in the morning, and went back to bed and said, no, that's fine. So at 5 o'clock I woke up again, and I had a look, and he wasn't in the office. His car was there. And then I went down to the river, and then I found him, and he shot himself.
What did he do in that moment?
I cried and stroked his leg and was there for a while. I prayed and then called the doctor, who had given me the Valium and not for dich anything.
You had been aware that he was stressed and not sleeping. Did you have any idea?
No. I would have done some other things so the guns were not there. But if somebody really wants it, they can do lots of things, yeah.
Did you tell your children what had happened?
Yeah, of course. You can live with the truth, but not telling the truth is not good. And the problem was, Fritz had worked hard and wanted to spend his holiday in Germany, and he was in Germany.
Your eldest son?
My eldest son, he was 15. And so when I phoned my parents-in-law, they said first, yeah, we will tell him, but they couldn't. So the next day we phoned and I told him the truth. And he found it strange that, because they told him it was an accident, and Fritz knew how strict he was with guns. So I told Fritz the truth, and his sentence was, and I know that 100%, Mom, thank you, or Mutti, thank you for telling me the truth, otherwise I will never have been able to trust you again, but thank you for telling me the truth. Yeah.
How did you farewell your husband?
I wanted to bury him where I found him, but that was not allowed. And I'm very happy about that today. So we needed to send him to Perth for cremation. And in Perth we had a little farewell. I wasn't there because I had little money. And friends said goodbye to him. And then the German consul came with the two urns. I had two urns, one for us and one for his family in Germany, and we had a farewell under the tree where I found him.
It's impossible to imagine, Frauke, you were just 37, you lost your husband in this tragic way, you have 4 children, no money, a failing farm. What did people expect you to do?
They expected me to go back to Germany. And of course I had thought about it, and I mean, 2 months later my brother-in-law and a very nice cousin came and we sat over the books and what to do. But by that stage I knew I wouldn't go back. I didn't want that people would be cross with Friedrich, because if you are that down, how can you be cross with somebody? And I didn't want that they feel sorry for me. And my kids loved it there, so I couldn't go.
That was your decision. What about Friedrich's family and your own father in Germany? Did they pressure you to come home with the children?
Very much so. And I can understand that. Father nearly had bought a house very close to him, and he was anyway not happy that I had gone to live so far away. And my parents and I just thought of course, also of their grandkids, you know. So the grandkids would have a good and maybe even better life back home again. But I decided not to go.
When you look back at that young woman with that steely determination, yeah, what do you think of her?
Maybe I can't even believe what I did, but I did. I could still make decisions, which I surprised some people. Because, I know some people who stay a year in bed because they're so down. No, I had four kids. I could not do that. I could not be weak. I could not.
This is Conversations with Sarah Kanoski on ABC Radio. Subscribe to the Conversations podcast. To find out more, head to abc.net.au/conversations.
Frauke, in the weeks after Friedrich's death, were there times where you could shut yourself away and just let it all out? How did you keep going?
The funny thing was, Friedrich hated smoking, and so I started smoking because he couldn't tell me off. So I sat at night in the veranda when I was lonely and had a gin and tonic, and people who know me, they know how little I drink alcohol, and had a cigarette so they wouldn't feel so lonely.
Tell me about Robert Frauke. How did he come into your life?
He phoned and wanted to borrow some machinery. And our friend Richard Titmarsh told me, don't let people get your machinery because you will never get it in the same stage back. I phoned him and said, listen, there's somebody who wants machinery. His name is Robert Bosshammer. Oh, he's okay. Even Richard had told me not to give machinery away. That's how I met him. I liked his deep voice. And he looked at some tiles I had from Germany. And because his family way back comes from Germany too, and he has been spent quite a while in Europe, also in Germany. And his mother comes from the area around Celle, near Hanover. So he spent some time there, and he could understand it.
And when the two of you started seeing one another, did that cause a bit of a stir in town?
Yes, I think so. But that didn't bother me. Robert, for sure not. Not at all.
What was it that maybe made people look twice?
Because I'm 11 years older, and I have four kids. And Fritz was 15, and, yeah, Maria was only 20 months old when it all happened, yeah.
And what did the four kids think about this new man?
They loved him, and he loved them too. He said when I met them and when they came back from boarding school and we went for dinner at the country club, I was nervous what the kids would think, and maybe he was nervous and I was nervous. But he said as soon as I met the kids, I fell in love with them too. Yeah.
Did you decide to continue on the farm together?
Yes, we did, but that took a while. I first had thought I will lease the farm, I will sell the machinery, and yeah, maybe start a business somewhere else in Perth. I thought maybe of a flower shop.
What kept you, what made you decide to stay on the farm?
Oh, because the relationship got stronger and stronger. And he wasn't a very practical farmer yet, but he studied agriculture in Getten for 4 years, and so he had a good background, yes.
Was it a different kind of relationship running the farm with him than it had been with your first husband?
Yeah, because I was maybe the wiser one. And, I mean, if we wouldn't have sold our farm in Germany, I would have gone back and would have run the farm with some help. But I would have been active in the farming because I love farming. I come from a farm. I went with Friedrich very often over the fields and look, does it need spraying? Does it need cultivating? Or yeah.
As well as working on the farm, had some friends who ran a high-end jewelers in Perth, some mm-hmm. German friends, mm-hmm. and you decided to invest in that business.
Yeah.
Where did you source your diamonds from?
From the Argyle mine, which at some stage was the biggest diamond mine in the world.
The biggest diamond mine
yes,
in the world?
Yes, from how many they got out, you know, maybe not the most gemstone quality diamonds, but and the very, very special pink diamonds.
How far is that mine from your home?
About 1.5 hours to drive.
You mention pink diamonds. What's special about pink diamonds?
It's the color, and it's only the Argyle diamond, pink diamonds, who can get so intense in the color. And we still don't know why the color is pink.
What kind of pink? Is it a rose or a deep pink?
They vary. There can be pink champagne, so there's a bit, don't call the name brown, but there's a bit brownish color in there, but very rose pink, but purple pink. We have all shades.
How rare are pink diamonds?
Very rare.
Where else can you get them from?
They're very pale ones, maybe from Africa and in Brazil, but nowhere in the world except Argyle in these intense, intense colours.
How do you have to handle a pink diamond?
Oh, very careful. I know what you're talking about now. I lost a pink diamond and it's still in my old shop somewhere. We could not find it.
Tell me what happened.
Oh, I had it in my tweezers. And look, people who deal in diamonds, they know they can jump quickly because you hold them and they can jump out of the tweezers.
Why? Because they have static electricity or what?
No, just because of the pressure. That's how I can say it. Mm.
So you were holding a pink diamond?
Yeah, I was holding a pink diamond to have a look at it, what the inclusions were, and then it jumped out and I could not find it. I called my staff, I looked the day after, I looked the day after, and I never found it.
So it's still there.
It's
somewhere.
Still there, yeah.
How did you go about learning about diamonds, Frau? Because you say you were a farmer from a farming family. How did you learn all of this?
Oh, you can. Look, I did go for a diamond course here in Sydney, and you learn by doing it. You learn by doing it. But, I never worked in a retail before. If you put your energy into it, your love, you can do it. You can do a lot of things. By then, I had my fifth child with Robert. I was 43 when I started the shop and had no idea. I always say I came to it like a virgin to a child.
First of all, you were selling just from your home on a mm-hmm. veranda, and then you moved to a store, Kimberley
yeah.
Fine Diamonds.
Yeah.
Were people prepared to spend big money for diamonds out in the middle of the Kimberley?
Yes, there were. People wanted to have Australian diamond.
On your daughter Margaret's wedding day, there was a French family who were interested in a diamond. What happened?
They went there. They came there a few times to talk about what size and what they could spend. And when they came back on Margaret's wedding day, she needed to look after them again. And they had, I think, 30,000 cash.
In cash?
In cash.
In Kununurra?
In Kununurra. Cash. I don't know how that travelled all the way. Yes.
Mm. I hope your daughter had a very safe deposit box to put that in before heading off to her wedding.
Yeah, we have a vault. Yes, we have. Thank you.
You'd also host visitors at your farm. And one Christmas, I think, a group of retired German Rotarians were visiting. What happened when the kids went for a swim in the pool?
Oh, a little crocodile was there.
In the pool?
In the pool, yeah. I'm sure other people have it close to a river too. You smile.
You sound very phlegmatic about the crocodile in the pool.
It wasn't a big one. It wasn't a big one. And then we got the wildlife inspector having a look, and it was only, not a salty, just a freshwater one. They're not the dangerous ones.
How did your German visitors react?
Of course, I couldn't believe it. A crocodile in the pool.
And then it came into the house, yes.
Yeah, but not for long. Not for long. Let's not talk about it too much about that.
Your kids were working with you, your daughter Margaret working in the store, and your sons Fritz and Peter on the farm. Did Peter enjoy that work?
I think he did. He did the watering, and we could ask him to change the water at midnight, and especially when Robert asked him, he would not complain, he just would do it. Yeah.
What kind of relationship did he have with Robert, who wasn't his birth dad but had been there?
Very good, because they both loved fishing. So when there was time, these two went fishing.
What would Peter catch up there?
Quite often barramundi.
What was life like for Peter outside of work at Kununurra? What did he enjoy?
Great friends. He had great, wonderful friends. And he loved football.
Is there a local football team up there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Odd. So even a few now, yeah.
After Christmas in 2000, Frauke, you and your husband Robert were away from the farm on holiday. What phone call did you get?
That was a Monday morning, and we were on our way to Brisbane to have holiday in Noosa, all together with the family, and we got the phone call, Peter's missing. And I felt already horrible. Peter's missing.
What did you think when you heard that? What did you imagine? Where might he be?
Because he might have gone fishing, and maybe the boat turned over and we have crocodiles in the river. That came to my mind.
Who was looking for him?
Fritz, because he didn't come for his work. And then Maria was home.
So his brothers and sisters are there looking for him. Yeah. Did they call other people in the community as well?
Yeah. In the end, the whole football team, it was January, so a lot of people went there, but we had a lot of people looking for him. And then there was found a boat which was turned over. So it wasn't good.
Did you come home straight away? Where were you and Robert?
We landed in Brisbane, and we stayed a night, and we didn't sleep. At least I didn't sleep. And the next day we flew back via Darwin to Kununurra.
And how was the flight?
Oh, horrible, just horrible. And the flight from Darwin to Kununurra, there was no normal flight, so Slinger picked us up.
A friend took you?
Yeah, but it was maybe not even legal because there were so many thunderstorm clouds around. He needed to. That was a horrible flight too.
But you knew you needed to?
We needed to be there,
back.
Yeah.
At one point, the search for your son was halted. There was a sighting of a crocodile, a large crocodile.
Yeah, they thought, maybe Peter was eaten by a crocodile, or at least killed by a crocodile.
What had happened?
Yeah. Our son-in-law, Lance, is a helicopter pilot and flew over the river, but at some stage found him.
I'm so sorry, Frauke.
Yeah. It's horrible. When Friedrich died, I needed to move on. I mean, of course, I grieved heavily, but I had four kids, and they were grieving, so what can you do? But if it's your son who, and in the end, it was also suicide. And that's why I open up about it, because if somebody in the family, in your neighbors, your friends have done it, if you think about it, it's maybe more acceptable to do it too. And I just ask people, talk to each other, talk about it again and again and again. And I can tell you the grief after is so big, please don't do it. It's not worth it. There are help. You know there are. It's getting better and better. Please don't do it.
Had you any idea that Peter was wrestling with something?
Nothing. Nothing. And we still don't know why. We still don't know why.
How were the hours and the days after his death? How was it different from when your husband died?
This is my child. I had 3 miscarriages. I had an operation with an open tummy. The pregnancy was horrible. When, with 15 weeks, I needed medication, so I wouldn't have not contractions, and they are horrible. And so we had Peter. He was a special, special young man. I think he was a favorite of all his siblings. And then this end, I still can't comprehend it.
Did you dream about him after he died?
My daughter, Maria, was going into year 12 and didn't want to go. Was at boarding school, so I said, okay, Maria, I come with you for the first 3 months, for the first semester. And I stayed in our townhouse in Perth, took Katrina with us too, and that's where I dreamt of Peter quite a bit. But in the end, he came, said, Mom, this is the last time I come to you, gave me a kiss. And since then, I've never dreamt of him again as an adult. As a child in the distance, but never as an adult again.
How did you mark what would have been his 21st birthday?
I wanted to be positive, so we had I put it in the local paper and said, listen, let's celebrate Peter's 21st birthday with a cricket game. He loved cricket very, very much too, and a lot of people came. And we had some food and tried to celebrate his life, which was good. It was a nice function.
Are there sights that you see or animals that you see in that landscape that he loved so much that you feel close to him?
Yeah, there's from time to time a bird coming. And for example, when Maria married, and she married in our house, this little bird, it flies through the house, and it symbolized something for us in our grief, especially Robert and I think that's what it is. It's a sign from him.
After this had happened with Peter, how did you talk to your other children? How did you try to reach out to them, and I guess to Peter's friends, to try to help anyone who was...
After the... when we had found him, I mean, he was missed for overall really 3 days. We had a psychologist there and debriefed his very grieving friends. They were very grieving because he was on the field when he played football quite aggressive, but off the field he was a very gentle person. Everybody listened to him when he spoke, and if he spoke. Yeah.
Tell me about your farm now, Frauke. What's growing there now?
Until recently we had Chia and Friedrich and his partner Tim and John Voss started the whole adventure. And that's why people can get Chia from
chia seeds.
Chia seeds now. We had grown from 2 hectares to 100 hectares to 1,000 hectares. And this year it was only 25 hectares.
So farming is up and down.
It's up and down, like everywhere. Look, everywhere. We also grow chickpeas and maize, hay, which is quite a new arm for us, yes.
And what about the diamond business? Is that still growing?
I had better times, but look, everybody's suffering a bit in whole Australia. I think it's in Germany the same. But overall, it's still fine. It's still a good business.
How many more years? How much longer will you be able to get those rare pink diamonds from the Argyle mine?
From the mine. At least they work till 2020. And then we see. But I have a very big stock. Whenever I have money available, I have bought pink diamonds.
And of course you've got that one in the carpet as well. Your farm became home to Hollywood for a while. What happened?
Yeah, we had, I said we had Hollywood in Kununurra. We had the movie made, part of it, in Kununurra for the movie Australia from Bez Luhrmann. And we had Nicole Kidman. Bez stayed in our house because there was not enough hotel rooms, so they needed to rent houses. And when I met Bez, he said, "Oh, I like your bed." And I just said, "Yeah, but you're on your own there."
What was it like in the town when they were there filming?
Oh,
what
was the atmosphere? Wonderful. Everybody was happy. I mean, Nicole lived only 2 houses away from us. And first, when she did her morning run, she ran with her bodyguard. But in the end, she ran on her own. She felt safe, I think, really safe. When they got first time into my shop, she had the bodyguard waiting outside, so everybody knew she was in my shop. And the next time she came with Keith and no bodyguard. And when they went for coffee, they went into line, not that they pushed themselves, "Oh, we're famous, we go first." That was nice. No, people loved it. People loved it.
Did the paparazzi arrive as well?
Of course, and they had taken a photo of our house from the other side of the river because they thought she would stay with us, not best date.
And what about the final viewing of Australia once it was finished? How did the town get to see the film?
It was outside, and then we had even a little storm and some drops, and the atmosphere was very good, very, very good.
Did people recognize the places on screen?
Ivanhoe Crossing, for example, and we sat very close to some indigenous people, and they were so excited to see Ivanhoe Crossing and other parts around our area, very much so.
Is the town very different now from when you first arrived?
Our town is much different. You get everything you need, maybe not in abundance like you get that here in Brisbane or in Sydney, but you can get everything.
Is there butter in the shops now?
Yes, and better bread and fresh milk. Yes.
You turned 70 last year.
Yeah.
How did you celebrate?
Oh, we celebrated my 60s in Broome. And so we decided to do that again. And it was marvelous because we had time for each other. And my best day was my first day when everybody was there and we have been in the water. And we could stay in the water. It wasn't too cold. It wasn't too warm. And could talk to each other in the water. My youngest grandchild was only a few months old, but it was just wonderful. It just was divine.
When you and your husband flew into Kununurra all those years ago, you had 3 children with you, this little isolated patch. How many were there to celebrate you in Broome, Frauke?
Over 20, I think, because there's some partners now, and Katrina's partner Frank from Peru was there. They're engaged now. Wonderful. We are very, very happy.
Lots of grandkids now for you too.
Yeah. All of them.
And when the time comes, and I'm sure it's not going to be for many, many years yet, Frauke, but where do you see your final resting place being?
Oh, I want to be cremated. I have that in my last will too. They can do with my ashes whatever. I still have some ashes of my very beloved Peter. And they can do whatever they want. Maybe I will ask Fritz to sprinkle some on my mother's grave, you know, in Kappeln in Germany. But otherwise they can do what they want. I just need to be free. Yes.
Frauke, thank you so much for being my guest on Conversations.
My pleasure.
Conversations with Sarah Kanoski on ABC Radio.
And if you feel like you need to talk to someone after hearing Frauke's story, then remember Lifeline is always there. Their number is 13 11 14. 13 11 14, and we'll put that on the Conversations website too, abc.net.au/conversations. The title of Frauke's memoir is A Diamond in the Dust, and she wrote it with Sue Smethurst. I'm Sarah Kanoski. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to a podcast of Conversations with Sarah Kanoski. For more Conversations interviews, head to the website abc.net.au/conversations.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.